does this 2-year-old vanish without a trace?
He was left with a trusted adult, and when I come back, my son was gone.
We haven't found a thread.
A lot of sleepless nights.
We will find him, no matter what it takes.
Was the toddler ever at Timber Creek Campground? Do his parents really know more about what happened to him? And is there a chance the boy is still alive?
They tried to get him to confess to being responsible for the disappearance of his son.
The parents of missing toddler D.R. Coons Jr. are now suspects in his disappearance.
Because the body of D.R. Coons has never been found, murder charges against his mom and dad are unlikely.
Telling us that they know that we're going to go to hell for what we did to our son, and how could we?
And I will look you straight in the eyes, and I will tell you, she knows where that body is.
Did you murder your son?
Absolutely not.
Was there an accident?
No. If there was, it wasn't to my knowledge.
I have been polygraphed, yes.
I don't think he's up there. I think he'd have been found if he was. Don't you?
Welcome to True Crime Brewery. I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick. Good evening.
Tonight's episode, Little Boy Lost, Where is D.R. Coons Jr.?
Where indeed.
Today we have this missing persons case. It's just over 1 year old. It's the disappearance of D.R. Coons. D.R. was just 2 years old, the official story goes, when he wandered off from his family's campsite at Timber Creek Campground in Idaho. Now this case has had a pretty good deal of media attention, but it remains unsolved. 8 months after the disappearance, a group of private investigators hired by the family and quickly fired by the family have come forward to say that D.R.'s case is a homicide and his parents are withholding knowledge of his whereabouts. This was not the first investigative group to come to this conclusion. We will start from the beginning and go over this complicated case today. But first, I'm going to read the 5-star reviews and allow Dick to review and pour our Idaho beer. So our 5-star reviews, the first one is from Frogiver78. It's great listen. This couple cracks me up. I love to listen to them. Dick can be condescending at times, but I still love his knowledge on topics and Jill and her sexy voice. That makes me blush.
I can see.
I could really listen to them talk all night. I love their beer review and how they describe every detail about it. I'm not a beer drinker, but would love to grab a beer and slide down to the end of the bar with these two and talk about a case or two. Love you guys. Keep up the awesome job.
Nice review.
Yeah. So, Frog Giver, welcome to the brewery.
Welcome to you.
And the next one is My Current Obsession by Abita Alex. I consider myself a true crime addict and I love craft beer. So pairing the two in this podcast is right up my alley. I do enjoy the soothing voices of the hosts, who remain that way even in telling the most sinister acts, or disagreeing on the value of eyewitnesses. While most of the stories they cover are not new to me, they do offer interesting insight that I might not have thought of before. Is it bad that I want them to cover an unsolved crime in my home state of Louisiana so Dick can finally try some good beer? Keep up the good work.
Welcome to the brewery.
Welcome to the brewery, Abita Alex, and I don't think it's bad at all.
No, and I could tell you, Alex, that I've had many Abita beers in my time, and as soon as we find a case in Louisiana, I think we'll visit it, and I'll review one of the beers, probably Turbo Doug, but we'll see.
Okay. And one more 5-star review. Love It by Elgraz68. Stumbled across this looking for a new true crime podcast. It quickly became one of my favorites. The hosts are thoughtful, and it's like discussing crime with good friends. Keep up the good work. So, Lugraz68, welcome to the brewery.
Welcome to you, too.
And before you do your beer review, I just am excited to say that we do have a little addition on our website of rewards for our TieGrabber members. So, if you join TieGrabber, we have different rewards for different levels. So, go to www.tiegrabber.com. and click on Team TieGrabber Perks and see if you're interested, because I'm really excited about this. This is a big step for us.
It is, and there's some really nice stuff. We thought a long time about what would be appropriate to give out for perks, and I think we did a good job.
Yeah, I think we came up with cool stuff.
Yes.
All right. So let's see what you've got for an Idaho beer.
So admittedly, living in New England,
mm-hmm.
we probably don't get a chance to try many Idaho beers.
No, but I love their potatoes.
We do, although we love Maine potatoes even better.
Oh, right. I forgot.
Please.
Yeah.
But anyway, I did manage to have, a while ago, Alpha Dog Imperial IPA that's brewed by Laughing Dog Brewing in Ponderé, Iowa. So this is an American Double IPA. And the description of this is really interesting, kind of cool.
Yeah.
Take an IPA and feed it steroids.
Whoa.
Expect something robust, malty, alcoholic, and a hop profile that might rip your tongue out.
Wow. It interests me. It's intriguing.
Ooh, it'll kill your palate.
All right.
So the imperial usage comes from the Russian Imperial Stout. Double IPA is often the preferred name. So Laughing Dog name there is Alpha Dog Imperial IPA. Double IPA doesn't make any difference. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this beer, in a snifter, because it's got a fair amount of alcohol in it, so we did the snifter route.
All right.
It's an amber color with a little bit of a tan head and some lace. And like a lot of IPAs, it's got a pine and citrus aroma, probably more predominantly pine. A little bit of caramel. And the taste follows the form of the nose. So it's a mostly piney taste, some grapefruit,
mm-hmm.
and a hint of caramel. This is a pretty big hop bomb. That's all you're getting assaulted with. The malt, the caramel, is kind of an afterthought in this one.
Yeah.
So for me, one of these would be plenty because my taste buds are shredded.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Dick. Let's open her up. Let's take these snifters and our stools and slide on down to the quiet end of the bar.
We're going to talk about Dior.
Yep. Little boy lost.
Let's see what happens.
Okay. Now, it was July 10th, 2015, when Dior Kuhn's parents made separate 911 calls, reporting the toddler missing from their campsite, and that was at the Timber Creek campgrounds outside of Lodore, Idaho. The parents both said that they believed Dior's great-grandfather was watching the boy, while the great-grandfather believed that the boy was down by the creek with his parents, and that the fourth adult on the trip, a friend of the great-grandfather, was with him as well. Now, Dior's father, Vernal Dior Kuhns, called 911 from his truck as he drove away from the site. He said he only had one bar on his cell phone and wanted to get to a better area for cell service. Dior's mother, Jessica Mitchell, called from the site. She described Dior to the 911 operator. The description was a 2-year-old, shaggy blonde hair, blue pajama pants, cowboy boots, and a camouflage jacket. According to Jessica, it had been 1 hour since they had seen little Dior.
So everybody thought he was with somebody else.
That's the story.
And they made two separate calls. I'm interested in that. I mean, one bar still means you have service, right?
It does.
So why did he think he needed to go? Why didn't they just stay in the one place and one of them try? And if it didn't work, then get in the car and or the truck and try to get to another better spot.
Well, yeah, that question's been asked, and the father said that he was afraid that they'd get on the phone and lose service because there was only one bar.
I guess that's plausible.
It's possible. Now, the people known to be at the campsite were his parents, Vernal and Jessica, and his great-grandfather, Robert Walton, who was Jessica's grandfather, and Jessica's grandfather's friend, Isaac Reinwand? I don't know if I'm saying that right, but that's how you spell it, Reinwand.
Yeah, I'd say it as it's spelled, Reinwand.
Okay.
And you might add that dad, his first name is Vernal, for now.
Yeah.
But he's Dior Sr.
Yes, he goes by Dior also. It's his middle name. So that can be a little confusing.
Yeah, I think either we'll call him Vernal or we'll call him Sr.
Let's call him Vernal.
Okay.
Now, Dior's parents said that they walked away from the campsite for 10 or 15 minutes to explore, and when they returned, the great-grandfather said that he thought Dior had gone with them. Dior's parents searched the area, and these times have differed in different stories, different versions, but approximately 20 to 30 minutes of searching. And after finding no sign of Dior, Jessica called 911, and this was at 2:30 p.m. Now, as we said, Vernal went off in his truck and called 911 as well.
Yes.
Now, search and rescue teams were dispatched to the area, and the Lemhi County Sheriff's Office searched for weeks with searchers on foot, eventually divers, a helicopter, and scent dogs as well. Dior's parents said they were convinced that Dior was abducted at that point because there was really no way he could have wandered off. Although one of the theories was that he was abducted, another one was that maybe an animal had gotten to him.
Yeah, I think those are difficult theories.
Yes.
And the other thing was, for sure, I mean, if they were only gone for about 10 minutes while they were looking for fish or whatever they were looking for.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how far a two-year-old in cowboy boots that were too big.
Well, we didn't mention that.
Well, but we're going to.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and mention that, as long as you brought it up.
Well, okay. So the point was that Dior was wearing a jacket and cowboy boots, and these cowboy boots were apparently his favorite boots, and they were way too big for him, and he always kept walking out of them.
Yes.
So the thing about, well, we were only gone 10 minutes or so, I don't see how he could have wandered off someplace.
And not have left a boot or anything behind.
Right,
yeah.
And not been found.
Right, or any part of him or any part of his clothing.
Right. And then the animal abduction part, that's a little far-fetched, too. I would have expected some noise.
I would have expected noise, and I would have expected some blood or some clothing or something.
Blood or clothing, yeah. The boots probably would have come off then.
Sure.
So they don't find either of those.
No, and there was no evidence of a kidnapping. There was only one way in or out of the campsite by vehicle. And the campsite was quite remote. They were off on their own. There was really nobody else around there. Now, they also said that Dior had a matchbox truck in his pocket, so they were looking for that, thinking that might have fallen out if he was abducted or taken by an animal. But that also was never found.
Yeah, they never found with all the searchers and dogs and helicopters and planes and ATVs and whatever else they brought in.
Right.
They never found a trace of him up there.
Nothing.
No, nothing.
Now, his blanket, his toy monkey, and his sippy cup, which his parents said he always had with him everywhere he went, were left behind at the campsite. So that is also strange. If he had wandered away, you think he would have brought those things, if these are things he carried everywhere.
Well, yeah, I have a tough time with that. I mean, I know they say he always had these things with him, but, you know, he's a two-year-old. He's got the attention span of a flea.
Yeah.
And he could have just wandered off.
Sure. He could have seen a butterfly or something.
Right.
Yeah. But, so this was on a Friday afternoon that it happened, and it was the day after they arrived. They had arrived and set up camp on Thursday evening. So throughout the first 2 weeks of searching, Jessica and Vernal remained at the campsite, and they slept nights in their tent. And they appeared appropriately concerned and distraught over this missing child. And a lawyer hired by the parents said that Dior was likely taken by a wild animal. I don't know where he came from or how he got that idea. But that's what their lawyer said.
Sure. I mean, we want to deflect attention from the parents.
Sure.
Because we're always going to think ill of the parents.
Well, not always, but sure.
Okay, most of the time.
Yeah.
So he's going to give his theories.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think that's as good as any. But, again, there's no sign of any animal abduction.
No, and I'm not sure what happened that led to the hiring of a lawyer now. Normally, I don't criticize anyone for getting a lawyer because I think that it's prudent. But if your child's missing and it's only a few days later, I'm not sure why you need a lawyer.
Me either.
No. Because it seems like the police were not going after them immediately. They thought that they were appropriate, and they were thinking this was an abduction or something like that.
Right. This was a manhunt in the wilds of Idaho in this state park. They were looking for a missing toddler who somehow got separated from his folks. So as far as the search party is concerned, he was there,
and
he went missing.
Yeah, and I think any parent can relate to, well, I thought you had him. You know, that happens all the time.
Yeah.
And a two-year-old, they can disappear on you, like in the grocery store or a department store. I've had that happen. It's terrifying.
Well, they can do that. They still should be found.
Well, yes. Usually they turn up, thank God. Yeah.
So that's the one difference. But yeah, I don't have any problem with a parent saying, well, I thought you were watching him, and the grandfather saying, well, I thought you were watching him. And, you know,
right.
That's entirely believable.
Sure. But they do, statistics do say that when a child this age wanders off, they're 99% of the time they're found within a quarter mile. They sure. don't get very far.
Well, no.
They're two.
he's two.
Yeah.
And he's stumbling around in these boots that are way too big for him.
Yeah.
So it should have been a simple matter of finding him if he had just wandered off.
Yeah, and there's some rough terrain.
Yeah.
Yeah, that he would have fallen. He certainly wouldn't have been able to scale down the hills and whatnot.
Not unless he had Army SEAL training or Navy SEAL training.
Okay, baby SEAL.
Get rid of that one. Baby SEAL.
Baby SEAL. Okay, so this happened on July 10th. On July 13th, Dior's parents were interviewed by the local news, and this is when they said that they no longer believed Dior was lost, but they believed that it was an abduction. They believed that someone had taken him. And at the time, they made a plea for the return of Dior, hoping that, well, what the public hoped at that point was hopefully it was the kind of abduction where someone wants a child to raise, not a pedophile or something awful like that. Something where he would be okay and possibly be returned. That's what you're hoping for in a situation like this, I would think.
Right. I know. And we've looked at those statistics before. The probability or possibility of a stranger abduction is pretty damn slim.
Yes, it is.
And this is a really remote area.
It is. Someone would have had to be following
with,
them.
One road in and out.
Yes.
And nobody saw any abduction.
Nobody saw anyone around.
Yeah.
Anyone suspicious.
Or, right.
Right.
So I have trouble with that theory.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was on July 16th that a representative from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children arrived on the scene. And the story was brought out onto the national media on the Nancy Grace Show.
My favorite lawyer.
Your favorite girl, yep. In August, Frank Vilt volunteered to investigate Dior's disappearance for just the cost of his expenses. And I believe Dick has the termination letter because he terminated his services with Jessica and Vernal in September after accusing the couple of lying about what happened to Dior. So I'm going to have Dick read the letter because this is interesting stuff, and it's a short letter.
Okay. We're going to read the entire thing? You want to hear the whole thing?
It's short. I think
it's,
so.
It's short enough.
You're good with that. I'm good with that. Yeah.
So he was hired in August and resigned in September.
Mm-hmm.
So he was on the case for a month. So, and here's his letter. Dear Dior and Jessica, as I previously informed you today via my text to your cell phone at 8:31 a.m., I am withdrawing from the investigation because of circumstances beyond my control, including but not limited to a breach of trust on your part concerning your refusal to allow me to make this case national. I am perplexed as to why you did not want me to advertise the $20,000 reward. I was willing to put up personal funds in the hopes that the public could provide information leading to the whereabouts of your son. When I agreed to assist you, I informed you that I had worked for my out-of-pocket expenses. I was willing to forego my normal hourly fee. My stipulation was that both of you would be absolutely truthful. I told both of you that if I felt you were not telling the truth, stalling me or otherwise misleading me, that I would withdraw from the investigation. In my professional opinion, both of you lied and misrepresented the true facts that could solve the mystery of your son being missing. And there's a few more things, but that's the gist of the letter.
Yeah, I think the thing that you didn't read at the end was, how can you live with yourselves? That really, that was strong.
Well, that's one little sentence.
I know, but that's a strong statement. That's all I'm saying. Well,
yeah, well
the whole letter is a strong statement.
The whole letter is the statement that he thinks they're lying to him and he's not going to be investigating anymore.
Right.
Now, he doesn't specifically come out and say what the lies are.
He doesn't, and we don't know him from Adam,
nope.
But it's a red flag.
For sure.
It makes you think.
He wasn't on the case very long.
No, he wasn't.
And we've seen interviews with him. He seems to be a pretty competent investigator.
He does. He's an older guy, and he seems valid.
Mm-hmm.
So that was in September.
That's September.
And then in November, the Coons family, and I believe it was Dior's father, hired Klein Investigations to help in their search for Dior. And then in February, Klein released his findings announcing that Dior was intentionally or accidentally killed, and he was promptly fired by the Dior, by the Coons family.
I can see why.
Yeah. Now, the police identified Jessica and Vernal as suspects in January of 2016. So, things are kind of falling apart.
Well, again, I mean, the story just has a few holes in it.
Yes. Now, Klein claimed that an anonymous individual is now paying for him to continue his investigation, and he has continued it, even though he was let go by the Kuntz family.
Yeah, and we are going to be talking more extensively about Klein and his involvement.
Sure.
I think that one thing I would say is that Mr. Klein is a publicity whore.
Yes,
and
it doesn't make him wrong, but yes, you're probably right
wrong,
about that.
But some of his things I would give less credence to just because of the way he presents them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he just loves being on camera.
He seems to. Mm-hmm.
So I think the overall tenor of his findings ring true.
He's very accusatory, but he does have facts to back him up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But something about him just grates on me.
Yeah. Now, in March of this year, Klein told EastIdahoNews.com that Jessica Mitchell knows where Dior's body is, but refuses to say where. So now they're saying it was a homicide, and that the parents know, or at least Jessica knows, where Dior's body's been hidden.
Right, which she, on camera, immediately branded as a total lie. She never said that.
Well, yes, she denies it. Now, he also told local reporters that Jessica and Vernal have failed several polygraph tests, and I know you'll go into that in his report a little later.
I have an extensive report from Mr. Klein.
Yeah. And in June, just a month ago, Klein's investigation team did a search of the campsite again and the surrounding area. Now, he said that when they did the search, there were several things that didn't match with what Jessica and Vernal's stories had said about the layout and locations. For example, when Jessica said that she was at a certain area and she was seeing Dior at a different area, that area was not visible from the site where she said she saw him.
Yeah, so she couldn't have seen him.
Right. Also, they said they were down at the creek and they saw some minnows that they wanted to show Dior. And it's kind of like a fast-flowing stream and there are no fish.
Yeah, I mean,
it's very rocky. And
minnows are all swept downstream.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a place where there would be any fish.
No, it's not a still little pool.
No. Now, investigators have not been able to find any witnesses who saw Dior Thursday evening either, where they had stopped at a store and they had stopped at a gas station. And they had mentioned several people that had seen him and things like that. So that was strange.
Yeah, this is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're going to give us a theory that sounds very plausible at the end of all this. But Jessica told the East Idaho News that the night before they got to camp, they stopped at the Silver Dollar restaurant and bar in Lenoir. Again, this was on their way to camp. But it was closed, so they went to camp, spent the night, went back the next morning. They went to Lenoir's only convenience store, went to a diesel pump to fill up the truck, and went back to the store for snacks before returning to camp.
Right. Now, she said when they were pumping gas that there was a truck driver that had actually looked in and waved to Dior in the car.
Right. She said that Dior was in the Suburban, their truck, when they got gas, and in the stage shop, which was the convenience store. Dior supposedly was playing with the truck driver, or not playing with him, but interacting with him. Mm-hmm. And he was supposed to be running around in the aisles of the store talking to people, flirting with the clerk.
Yeah.
But nobody at all remembers seeing a little boy.
No, the investigators went over the receipts of things sold prior to Dior's family going to the shop and after they left and contacted everybody who had shopped there. And nobody remembered seeing a 2-year-old blonde boy.
Not a one.
At all.
And this was a boisterous 2-year-old who was running around the aisles.
Yes.
According
to his own mother, yeah.
Yes. So mm-hmm. There's something going on there.
That's odd.
Very odd.
So the only person that saw Dior after Thursday when Dior was at his grandmother's house, then the only person that saw him besides his parents and his great-grandfather was this Isaac Reinwand. And he's the only one besides these three family members who can be a witness to the fact that Dior was actually at the campsite.
Ooh. Yes.
Right.
Now, just before we started doing this podcast, I listened to his interview.
Yes.
And it sure isn't at all clear to me that he actually saw the baby.
Really?
Really.
Okay.
And the only time he specifically said he saw him was when he was asked point blank, did you see Dior? And yeah. He said, yes, I did. But he's recounting the day's events and what happened and this and that, and there's absolutely no mention of Dior in that interview.
Right.
Until he's specifically asked. So
was
I'm just
he there? Yeah.
I'm just thinking that even though he says he saw the baby, the little boy.
Right.
I'm not sure how credible that is.
Yeah, that's a mystery to me because he doesn't seem to be lying.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't seem to be.
And if you're going to talk about that later, he was the only one that's been deemed truthful by the investigators.
Yeah.
The other three adults have been felt to be lying.
Yeah, so if it weren't for him, I would definitely say that Dior never made it to the campground. That's what I would say.
I would still say that.
Yeah.
Because I'm just not happy with his answer or his interview that he actually saw him.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was suggested that he saw him.
Yeah, but he doesn't really... You think he's just protecting someone? Or he's confused? I mean, he seemed like he might be a little slow. I don't want to be insulting to him at all, but he seems like he could be a little slow.
He could be. I think it was suggested to him and that he was... I don't think he was deliberately misleading people.
Right.
I think he was just figuring, yeah, he should have been there, so I must have seen him.
Okay. And he had never met them before. We should say that.
He's a brand new player.
He'd never met Vernal or Jessica or Dior.
None of them.
No. So there is a theory going around that Jessica and Vernal and the great-grandfather needed a witness because something had happened or been done to Dior, and they purposely brought him up there with them so they would have a witness.
That wouldn't be far-fetched to me.
Okay. So it's a theory. Now, Vernal and Jessica aren't together anymore, although they do support each other's claims that they had nothing to do with Dior's appearance.
Disappearance.
Oh, sorry. Did I say appearance?
Yes.
Well, they probably had a lot to do with his appearance, as they were his parents.
They did.
But they say they had nothing to do with his disappearance. Now, Jessica married a new boyfriend just this June, and she's been highly criticized for her decision to move forward in this new relationship. Now, she claims that her new husband is an emotional support to her, and I'm willing to give her that. I think it's a little quick, but if she did find someone supportive to her and she's having this horrible time losing her son, and this makes her feel better, I'm okay with that.
I suppose. I mean, again, like you said, it was a little quick. I mean,
yes.
Her fiancé and the father of their child, Vernal.
Yeah.
They break up.
Yep.
Shortly after she meets this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And soon after that is engaged and married.
That's right.
So it did move pretty quickly.
It is quick. And we still don't know why she didn't have her other two. She had two older children from a previous relationship.
Right.
And we don't know why she didn't have custody of them.
We don't. We know that the father of those two kids had custody.
We do.
But we don't know why she didn't have custody.
No, but it's something worth questioning, because usually women get custody unless it's extenuating circumstances.
I was going to say, the mother gets custody, usually.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe she didn't feel like she's capable of raising the two kids. And if that's the case, then. So we don't know.
We don't know. But it does raise an eyebrow, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so does her quickie marriage. But again, if this is a emotionally supportive person who's going to help her get through this terrible ordeal, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the realist in me says it isn't, that it's probably a mistake that she jumped into. I have no basis for it, but except my life experience.
Realist or cynic or whatever. Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Now, Philip Klein, who continues to investigate Dior's disappearance, he told Headline News Network in June that blood evidence was found on the rear wheel well of Vernal's truck. Now, this was big news to me because I hadn't seen it in any of the other reports. Now, the police had never mentioned it.
No. And I'd like to know, what does he mean by blood evidence? Is it Dior's blood? Whose blood is it?
Yeah, that's the conclusion you would jump to, but it really doesn't say. So
they don't expand on that.
Right. Now, Sheriff Lynn Bowerman in July, just 2 weeks ago, stated that he believes Dior was never at the campground and that his disappearance is a homicide. Now, he doesn't say what he based it on because it's an open investigation, but he did name the parents as suspects.
Well, I think that's where we're heading anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, there's absolutely no evidence other than great-grandpa's friend, that the baby, the little kid, was at the campground.
Sure.
And there's no trace of him at the campground.
No.
So whether he wandered off and got lost and died, or was taken by an animal or abducted by a stranger, there should have been some evidence.
I think so.
So yeah. In the absence of that, how else could he be gone? Well, the answer to that is that he never was there.
Yes.
Something happened to him in Idaho Falls.
Right. Now, but to me, I wonder, why would the great-grandfather cover something like that up? Unless he had something to do with it, which is strange, but, you know, the world is strange.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe his granddaughter said, "Grandpa, we need your help with something."
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. I'm just guessing.
Right. That's all we can do, really, is, you know, surmise or guess.
But you had brought that up while we were driving around listening to some of these interviews and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost like a flash out of the blue that you said, "I bet he never got to the campground."
Well, there's no evidence of it, like you said.
And the more I think about it,
mm-hmm.
the more likely that seems.
It does seem that way, especially now that we know that on Thursday nobody saw him at the store. They'd stopped at the store, and the mother had this whole story of him running around and playing.
Right.
Now, why wouldn't the clerk know that, or someone that was shopping have seen him?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You don't forget something like that. Especially if you find out the next day that kid's missing.
Yeah.
That would really stick in your head.
And you'd say, "Wow, I just saw that kid running around."
Right. And he's an adorable kid.
Yeah, but nobody saw him.
Nobody saw him. And even the guy who was getting the diesel fuel said that he didn't see him in the truck.
No, he saw the dog in the truck.
Right.
But he didn't see the little blonde kid in the truck.
No.
So he got a look in the truck. He recognized what was going on in the truck.
He did. But he didn't see a child.
Nope.
No. Now, Klein Investigations just recently released a several-page report on the Dior Kunz case, and Dick has printed that up so we can go over that. It's quite detailed, several pages, and it goes over a lot of the things that we've already been talking about. So it just kind of answers some of our questions and brings up questions that we hadn't thought of yet. So what is that start out? Let's go with that. Let's start out with that, I mean.
Well, Klein released a full report on the case Saturday evening, July 16th.
Okay, so that's 10 days ago.
That's 10 days ago.
Very recent.
He is not a police officer and cannot make arrests or conduct an official investigation of the case.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, law enforcement investigators have not confirmed any information or details contained in the report.
Right. But he does say that he's working alongside the police.
He does. Okay, so just a little quickie background. In November 2015, Klein Investigations agreed to take the case, and through fundraisers with the general public, $29,000 was raised for the investigation, of which $20,000 was used for investigators, equipment, travel, and hotels only.
Mm-hmm.
Investigator hourly cost and all other costs have been donated by the Klein Foundation, blah, blah, blah. And they're kind of hinting that somebody took $9,000 that was left.
Yeah, he's saying how much money is unaccounted for?
Yep.
$9,000-something?
So he doesn't accuse anybody.
Well,
just,
no.
Just we have no idea what happened. So the fill-in-the-blank thing is that the parents took it.
Okay. So supposing they did, I don't think that makes them guilty of hurting their child.
No, because we've learned that they've been evicted, or they had been evicted from their apartment for non-payment of rent. I mean,
they don't have money.
They have no money.
And they lost work time with this whole situation, I'm sure.
Yep.
They stayed up at the campground. They didn't have their normal lives of working. I don't know if she worked, but I know that Dior was a truck driver and did work.
He was a driver, yep.
So if they used the $9,000 for their expenses, I don't think that's any worse than Klein Investigators paying for their hotel if they were paying their rent or whatever.
No, I don't think that's...
So I don't think that has anything to do with anything,
well,
I'm saying.
It,
I disregard
it doesn't,
that.
I'm going to... Well, disregard it, I think it's just another part of the case against the parents.
Well, I think he's, you know, purposely throwing jabs at them.
That's what he's doing.
And I think there's enough things against them that are pertinent that we don't need to be throwing in random jabs at their character.
Right.
Okay.
So, in the interest of getting through this before it's midnight.
Yeah.
During a camping trip on July 10th, 2015, Bernal Kunz and Jessica Mitchell Anderson reported to 911 Idaho that their son Dior is missing in a campground near Lodore, Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
Massive searches were undertaken within 5 square miles of the site where the child went missing, allegedly went missing. No trace evidence found. The following public and private agencies are currently investigating, or have been investigating.
Mm-hmm.
The Lemhi County Sheriff's Department, which is the lead criminal agency. The Bonneville Sheriff's Department from Idaho Falls, Idaho, is the backing agency. U.S. Department of Justice, FBI, is a backing agency. U.S. Department of Justice, FBI, Missing Children's Division and Laboratory, Klein Investigations, and Frank Viltz, who, as we know at this point, had resigned and has nothing to do with the case.
Sure. Okay, so he lists the people who are involved.
He lists the people. Then he gives a little background previous findings. He said that Klein Investigation came into the case in November of 2015,
mm-hmm.
cold, in exclamation points.
Well, what he meant by that, from what I saw in his interview, is that he didn't want to take any information that had already been gathered. He wanted to start out with a blank slate and do the investigation on their own.
Right.
To see objectively what they came up with.
He didn't want to know anything that had been going on. He was going to start from fresh.
Sure.
So, phase one, it was determined that the following theories needed to be examined.
And these are the three theories we mentioned.
These are the ones. An animal or large animal had taken a child. Forced or unforced kidnapping had occurred. Or a homicide, being either by accident or intentional.
Mm-hmm. Which would have had to be by the parents and the grandfather.
If the child was there.
Well, whether he was there or not, it would have been before they got there or after they got there.
Yeah, it was before there.
Okay.
During phase two of the investigation, each theory was examined and compared to the witness statements of each of the family members.
Okay, and who did they interview?
Father, the mother, the grandfather, and the family friend.
Oh, just the four people who were there.
Right.
They must have spoken to her mother, who saw them prior to the trip.
Well, it just says family members.
So. Okay. But they did put her through, well, you'll get to that with the lie detector tests. Go ahead.
I haven't gotten to that yet. You wanted me to read the whole thing.
Well, I don't want you to read it word for word. Just let's go over the findings and things.
So that was phase two. Phase three was completed in March of 2016. And the determination was, number one, there was no evidence that the child was taken by an animal. Number two, there is no evidence that a forced or unforced kidnapping had occurred. Number three, there is evidence that a homicide had occurred by either accident or intentional means.
Okay, so at that point, when was this, March?
This was March of this year.
So he's still saying it could have been an accidental death of the child that was being covered up. Because now he's not saying that. Now he's saying it was an intentional homicide. Well, I don't know what changed his mind.
This was in March.
Okay.
It was discovered that manipulation and outright deception was undertaken by Vernal Kuntz, Jessica Mitchell Anderson, and Robert Bob Walton. It was further found that after refusing to speak with Klein investigators, that Isaac Ryan Wand came forward to investigators and gave four statements. So after examining those, they reached the following conclusions.
Okay.
So Vernal Kuntz was deceptive, had failed 5 separate polygraph examinations, and had told 6 different stories.
Hmm.
So he was declared a suspect in a homicide, either by accident or intentional means.
Now, that's because he failed the polygraph and changed his story?
And kept changing stories.
What Klein said in an interview was that Vernal actually didn't even pass the question, do you plan on telling us the truth?
Yeah.
That came up deceptive.
I mean, he failed from the get-go.
Yeah.
And so did Jessica.
Failed miserably, yeah.
Right.
And how many did Jessica take?
So Jessica was deceptive. This is the Klein investigator's conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica was deceptive. She had failed 4 separate polygraph examinations and had told 5 different stories. So she was declared a suspect.
Hmm.
Great-grandpa was deceptive. Had told 2 stories to investigators and was inconclusive on his polygraph examinations.
Now, why do they say he was deceptive if it was only inconclusive? That's not failing.
Because he told 2 different stories.
Okay, and we don't know what those stories were.
We don't know what they are.
It'd be helpful if we knew what they were.
They declared him a person of interest, not a suspect. And Isaac Reinwand was truthful, had told the same story to investigators and law enforcement 4 different times.
Hmm.
Some details had been left out of one of the stories. So after review, he was declared a person of interest. So we've got 2 people, mother and father, that are declared suspects by Klein investigations, and 2 that were declared people of interest.
Now, did Reinwand ever take a polygraph?
I don't know.
Okay. It doesn't say that he did, though.
Doesn't.
Okay. So we know that the parents did and that they failed. and they were named suspects, and then the other two people there are named persons of interest.
Right.
Okay.
So, they're still investigating. In June of this year, investigators arrived in Ladore, Idaho, and completed a 5-day targeted search. Investigators flew in, and investigators, we mean Klein Investigations.
Yeah, the private investigators, that's right.
They flew in Tracy Sargent and her dog Chance, who is a well-known and well-respected searcher from the state of Georgia. They flew in MJ Holmes of Georgia, who is well-known for her advanced interview and operation skills. And during this operation, law enforcement agents from both Limhi and Bonneville counties were represented. So here's what they decided.
So these are the conclusions.
These are the conclusions. And some of these I'm not sure I understand totally. But the time distance study to fully verify or disprove Vernal Kuntz's timeline, the time distance study to fully verify or disprove Jessica Mitchell's timeline,
mm-hmm.
cell phone impact and signal study of known directional pings.
Okay, wait a minute. So what that means is that the pings from their cell phones were not matched to where they said they were when they called. That's what I got from that.
I haven't gotten to that. I'm just talking about what they studied. I'm going to get to the results.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, and they did another site location study to verify or disprove the testimony by witnesses. They did a dog search and a secondary dog search in the city of Idaho Falls at two different locations. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now the results.
Okay.
You're jumping ahead.
Well, you said conclusions.
I said studies.
Anyway. Okay. All right.
So the time distance study failed to verify Vernal Kuntz's testimony in his timeline. It also failed to verify Jessica Mitchell's testimony. Cell phone impact study was able to determine that Vernal Kuntz's testimony was fabricated. As well, it was determined that Vernal Kuntz's testimony that he drove 1.5 miles to get a cell phone signal was not truthful.
Okay. Now you said that really fast. So?
So they said that basically, Vernal's lying and Jessica's lying. He's also lying about driving to find better reception on his cell phone.
Now, are they saying that because they drove that and the reception wasn't better? Or are they saying that because they think he never did that?
They don't say that.
Okay. Because my understanding from the interviews was that they drove, in some cases he said 1/2 mile, in some cases he said 1.5 miles, and that they drove the route that he said, and there was no better signal in that direction as he said there was. That's what my understanding was.
Okay. I'm just reading what the report is.
Yeah. I'm just elaborating.
The site location study was completed and determined that the testimony of Kuntz, Anderson, and Walton not only could not be verified, but physically according to their statements to Klein Investigations, the events as portrayed could not have occurred.
Okay. Now, this is what we were talking about when we said that when she said she looked back at Little Dior from a certain location by the creek and saw him walking.
Right. She couldn't have seen him from there.
Right. When they went there and tried it, it actually didn't work. So just some of that wording's a little vague.
So the dog study presented 5 areas of hits, which are explained further.
Mm-hmm.
And the secondary dog study was productive. So the primary dog search was in the campground. The secondary one was in the family home of Idaho Falls.
Okay, so the home where Vernal lived or the grandmother's home? Because I know they searched the grandmother's home.
I think, they searched both. So the following are the hits.
Okay, so where were the hits?
In the campground. A diaper tree area, that a diaper was hung in the tree in the campground. A place east of the campground in a loose ground area. Another place east of the campsite. 2 miles northeast of the 15-mile-per-hour stake in the ravine. And at a campsite ground 3/4 mile east of the campground.
Now, these were sites that the dogs reacted to.
These were sites that they reacted to. The diaper tree area, no evidence was found. Evaluation was undertaken. This area needs to be further studied. Area 3, which is due east of the campsite, they found that a previous animal had been buried at this location.
No, they shouldn't react to an animal, though. Well, I think cadaver dogs are supposed to know if it's
just
human.
Human?
That's what I thought, but it's saying that they reacted.
Well, during the burial, the subject who did the burial cut his hand and bled into a towel wrapped around the animal. Area 4, investigators would turn this over to law enforcement. And Area 5, investigators believe this site may have been a holding area for some type of human body.
Okay, now it says that, but it doesn't really say why they believe that. That drives me crazy.
No, there's a lot of unanswered questions here.
He throws out some really shocking statements, but he doesn't back them up. And it's possible that he doesn't do that because it's still a case under investigation, but it's very frustrating to try and figure out how he's coming up with these conclusions. Although I guess in the future, it will all come to pass.
It will. So the secondary search sites are in Idaho Falls.
Okay.
The first one was Jessica's mother's residence, the Clegg's residence.
Okay.
Trina Clegg is Jessica's mother.
And that's where they were.
Diora's grandmother.
Right. And that's where he was last seen by someone besides these four people.
Right.
Right.
House, trailers, camping equipment, and other equipment was cleared. Grandma has not been named a suspect, and investigators have no evidence to suggest as such. Unclear if she has any information.
Okay.
Her second polygraph is pending.
And what was her first polygraph?
We don't know. See, there's more kind of disinformation.
I would think if she had a second one, does that mean she failed the first one or it was inconclusive? Because I think if you passed it, then you wouldn't do a second one. But
right.
How do I know? But that would be my guess.
So the other area that they searched in Idaho Falls was the residence of Vernal and Jessica.
Okay, now this is the place they were evicted from, right?
Both had been evicted for not paying rent and had left in the apartment furniture and clothing.
Mm-hmm.
The landlord had cleaned out the apartment and moved all the articles near a dumpster for removal as the property had been declared abandoned by the landlord.
Now this was in June, so it had been almost a year when they did that?
Right.
Okay.
So investigators were given permission to search the abandoned waste by the landlord.
And this is Klein and Klein's investigators.
This is Klein's investigators. So they found four matchbox cars, which were previously described by the parents as missing and that they did not know where they were.
Yeah.
So that's one thing.
Okay.
A child's jacket, camo jacket, similar to the one described by both parents as being worn on the day of the event and suggested to be missing with the child.
Now, see, the car thing, I'm not sure because who knows how many matchboxes he had. Unless the parents specifically said he had four and they were missing, which is kind of what he's implying there.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. But the jacket.
How many camo jackets does a two-year-old
I would think need? That he only had one.
I mean, it's possible too.
He had two, but I think that that's more suspicious to me that they found that jacket because we saw pictures of him in that jacket. It's a little hoodie. And that's what they described that he was wearing. When you see the description by the police, that's exactly the jacket.
Right.
It's a little hoodie. And that's what they found.
Yeah, but it's at their home. It's not,
right.
It's not on the child's body.
But I mean that the jacket they found is exactly the same. It's not just another camo jacket.
No, it sounds like it's exactly the same jacket.
Yeah.
And then they found a couple other things that I'm not remotely sure.
Yeah, I don't even know why they're mentioned, but you can go ahead and mention them.
I'll mention them.
Yeah.
A credit card used by a family friend with seemingly purchases of items unknown to investigators. Now, I have no idea what that means.
No, and I don't know what that means. You're right. I have no idea.
And then we have an insurance tracking device box and instruction package.
So that sounds to me like...
Is this like the stuff you put in your car to hopefully lower your rates?
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
So I don't know what that is.
Now, does that have GPS on it? I don't think so.
I don't either.
It could.
It might.
I mean, if they were driving somewhere to do something.
It can. It has mileage and stuff, so you could.
So it might.
You could look at that and say, well, you got way more miles on this than you said you did.
Sure. So if they had driven somewhere else, that's possible.
Yeah.
Although it's also possible it came and they'd never installed it yet. It's really... That doesn't prove anything.
Okay, here's their conclusions.
Okay.
And this is as of like 10 days ago.
Yeah.
Hot stuff.
Hot off the presses. And
these are Klein Investigations conclusions.
Okay.
Number one, we believe that the parents, Vernal Kuntz and Jessica Anderson, are deceptive with intent to cover up a crime.
Jessica Mitchell?
Jessica Mitchell Anderson.
Oh, okay. Is Anderson her new married
name? Her new married name? Because they call her Jessica Mitchell, and they call her Jessica Mitchell Anderson.
Well, Anderson only came in the last few reports, so I guess that's her new married name.
That's her new married name. So they think that they're being deceptive. Number two, we believe that our investigation now starts regarding an intentional homicide. Number three, we have no evidence other than the testimony of the four persons that indicates that Dior Kunz Jr. was on the mountain as testified by these people.
Yeah, that's the big one for me.
That is the big one. We believe that the parents, through family members and through friends and social media, have begun a misinformation operation on behalf of Dior Kuntz and Jessica Mitchell to impugn the jury pool, mislead the public, mislead law enforcement, and mislead investigators.
Now that sounds a little crazy. I mean, the jury pool, you think that they're already thinking they're going to be arrested and they're trying to win people over for that reason?
Right.
I don't know. They might be defending themselves and denying it, but the fact that they're planning for a jury pool, I don't know.
Well,
that seems like...
They had an interview in People magazine.
Oh, yeah, you read that. I didn't.
Tell
me about that.
A couple weeks ago, and it was a real puff piece in favor of the parents.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's no mention in it of them not being together any longer or that she's remarried.
Did they mention her other children?
They mentioned that her other children were in the custody of their father.
Okay.
Just basically, whatever the parents said, People magazine took as truth.
So it was an interview with the parents.
It was an interview with the parents.
And there was nothing contradicting anything they said.
Nothing.
Okay. Well, that's People magazine, you know.
Well, they're trying to sell magazines.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I see those magazines and I think, ooh, that looks interesting. And then there's really nothing in them. There's no information.
No.
You're right. It's just a puff piece.
It's the information that People magazine wants you to have.
Yeah.
Or by extension, that the people being interviewed want you to have.
I guess so, yeah.
Well, one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have now, due to the testimony of all witnesses, including store employees, clerks, beer distribution drivers, fuel handlers, and credible witnesses that have given credible testimony, that we cannot find any person that saw the child go up to the mountain either the day of the event or the evening before. So we are therefore now moving our timeline of the event back to 5 p.m. of the day before the 911 call was made.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Very good sense.
I think I want to know what happened the day before.
So, and then he finishes up with...
Which makes me...
Congratulating
sorry.
All the law enforcement people and how much esteem they have for them, blah, blah, blah. There's nothing else.
He really kisses up to them.
Yeah. So like I said, he's kind of a media whore. But he raises, I think, some very valid points.
Well, you know, what's interesting, I was just going to say, is that Vernal was at work and came home from work to get ready for the trip. So that kind of makes me think that if something happened to this baby, it wasn't Vernal that did it.
No.
It's something that happened with the mom or the grandpa or something before Vernal got home from work and she said, oh, shit, Vernal, this happened.
Yeah.
We got to go up to
them. And we've seen an interview with the two of them by the Idaho news media.
Yeah.
Where... she says, did you have anything to do with the death of your son? And he says, I didn't.
Yeah.
And he didn't say, we didn't. He just said, I didn't.
Right. Although he would know. He would have to know because he's failed these lie detector tests. So he must have some idea.
I'm sure.
He must have participated at least in the cover-up if that's what happened.
I think he knows that. But he can say, I guess truthfully, that he didn't have any involvement in the actual death of the child.
Right.
He just helped cover it up.
Right. Well, makes me wonder if the mother did something to him.
I think we're going to find stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, this was only 10 days ago, so there's a lot to, there's more here to add to your episode that you want to do on follow-ups of cases.
Yes, there's going to be some follow-up. And it seems to me that with all this stuff coming out, that there's going to be arrests made pretty soon and charges brought against the parents.
Yeah. Which I just don't understand how parents could hurt a 2-year-old. I don't understand what could have happened that would make that happen. It's mind-boggling to me.
You know, we talked about Ayla Reynolds up in Waterville.
This reminds me a bit of it, yeah.
And we're pretty suspicious of the father in that situation, so.
And the mom was kind of weird, too.
You know, you say, I don't know how a person could hurt a little innocent 2-year-old.
Yeah, but that father seemed... violent and bad. This father seems more caring to me. This father, I mean, I know, I don't know him.
I don't think we know enough information about him.
No, but we knew quite a bit about Ayla's father that made us think that he was a shithead. He'd have gone out and bought life insurance. You know,
he
terrible.
Did all sorts of things that made fingers point to him.
Yeah, and I still can't believe he's not arrested. I mean, in that case, there was blood in the basement and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Well, stay tuned.
Yeah.
We're adding that to our list of follow-ups to be done.
Absolutely. That's one that I really would like to see something
this
happen.
This one, I'm pretty sure that at some point before the year's end that the parents will be arrested and charged.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a mystery. So it'll be interesting to see.
It will.
Well, until next time,
I'm done.
It.
I don't have anything more to say. I think I talked a lot today.
You did. You did a good job.
Oh, good. We'll see.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Just before we go, I want to remind you to visit our website, www.tiegrabber.com. And if you're interested, you can check out our Team Tie Grabber perks and join Team Tie Grabber.
That's right. Donate money and get really cool things.
Yeah, and just a small amount of money. I mean, it starts at $2. We were doing $1, but there's a 33-cent charge through PayPal, so it's really not worth doing the dollar, or else I would, because then a third of your dollar is just going to fees, so that's kind of silly, I thought. So that's it with that. Another way to help us a lot is to keep those 5-star reviews coming in, because that really helps us get more listeners through iTunes, and I love to read them. Sometimes I blush a little, because they're very kind. But I do love to read them, so keep those coming. Those help us a lot.
Well, and it also gives us a chance to pick up other cases. I mean, one of those reviews, 5-star reviews, mentioned the case in Canada, the Bosma case.
Well, I don't know if it was the review. It was an email.
Well,
but it was one of our listeners.
But yeah. It was a listener. I mean, there's suggestions that come in, and Abita Jack or whatever his name is. I think it's Abita Alex. Abita Alex.
Yeah.
Had some great information in terms of looking up Louisiana crimes.
Sure, yeah.
So I'm pretty sure we're going to do that one sometime soon.
Great.
So it's always good to hear from people and get some new ideas.
I love to hear from listeners. That's my favorite thing about doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks, everybody, and take care of each other.
That's right.
And
hug your kids.
That's right, for sure. So from the brewery, toodaloo.
Goodbye.